services will help you. Today we have myself, Liz Sprouse, and Marianne Stumbaugh, our assistant directors, and one of them will help you with your problem. I am also so happy to welcome with us today Tim Chaney, engineering class of 88, who's going to be our presenter. And I want to tell you just a little bit about Tim, and forgive me that I'm going to read this. I've known Tim for a while. He's just such a great guy, and I want to tell you a couple specific things before I get started. Tim is a certified transformative coach. I see that Karen has a question. Marianne or Liz, can you help her? He's an expert in helping people create more success in less time with no stress. Love that. So as a coach and a catalyst to high achievers, what do high achievers often do? Let's think about it. They're highly successful at something they no longer may want to do. They have high success in one area of their life to the detriment of all the others. Despite their success, they're neither happy nor fulfilled. They're ready to create success without the stress. And they may feel stuck in a performance plateau or slump. So maybe that sounds like you or somebody you know or love. Tim believes it doesn't make any sense to beautifully paint the rooms of a house built on a cracked foundation. So instead, he helps his clients to strengthen their inner foundation and see their world in new ways. When you see the world differently, the world you see is different. Tim creates the space where insights and miracles happen for his clients on a regular basis. Tim's the author of the forthcoming book, How Much Freedom Can You Stand? Ideas You've Never Heard Before for Results You've Never Gotten Before. And he'll launch the only school in the world devoted to personal freedom this year, mid-2012. What Tim is most proud of is his marriage of 22 years to his beautiful wife, Monica, also Oahu, college class of 89. His marriage gets better every year, and his amazing son, Drew, he is proud of, his best buddy and his greatest teacher. Tim also enjoys birding, tennis, photography, and UVA athletics. Go Hoos! So I am just terrifically glad to welcome Tim today. And I'm sure Monica, who I'm sure is signed on here somewhere. So we're awful glad to have you here, Tim. I'm going to turn off my talking video, and I hope you will turn on yours. And thank you, everybody, for being here. And take it away.
Hello. I hope people can hear me. Well, first of all, I'm just delighted to be here this afternoon and have this opportunity to give back to the UVA community who's given me so much. And I just want to thank everyone at UVA Alumni Career Services, Emily, Liz, Marianne, for the opportunity and for all the support that you've provided me in making this webinar happen and working through some of the technical issues. There we go. Sorry about that. I wasn't turned on the video, so great. I see myself, and I hope you see me now, too. So this presentation is called Goal Achievement Made Fun, and what we're going to see today is there are two different ways to approach the whole idea of achieving goals, and your experience of the process of achieving goals and actually achieving them will be radically different depending upon which approach you take. I do want to say this, there is no right way to go about this. I don't have all the answers. You are the expert on you. And my intention here is not to fill you with a lot of new information. I don't think that you need more information. What I'm hoping is that you'll get maybe just one insight that will change how you see your world. And if you just get one insight today, that would be wonderful. Some of the things I'm going to be talking about are unconventional, I would say, and so they might not be easy to hear at first. And that's perfectly normal and okay. When I first learned some of these principles, I struggled for quite a while to grasp them. But what I found was that the longer you keep looking and testing these ideas in your own experience of life, the more deeply you will come to understand them. So what I wanted to do is to kick off the proceedings, I have a cute little video from YouTube that I think really speaks to how most of us go about the goal achievement process. So I think Marianne's going to cue that up for us, and we'll have a watch here. I don't know if I should be tap dancing right now as we're waiting for this to load, but okay, here we go. Thank you.
I don't see any video
that not getting everything done. And so when I saw this, I just loved it because it expressed a lot of how we go about approaching goals. We have this never-ending list of things we want to accomplish. And yet we're too busy to enjoy the actual experience of accomplishing those things. And the reason we're doing all this is because we think that if we check these things off our list, we will actually finally get to a place where we're happy, fulfilled, secure, successful, we have peace of mind, we can just enjoy life. So it's really this notion that I will someday get to be happy if I can ever get all these things off of my list. So I thought that was a perfect lead-in to the two approaches to goal setting. And the fundamental premise of each one is completely different. In what I call the traditional approach, what we are pretty much taught and society reinforces is that the world we live in is an outside-in experience. And things happen to us, people do things to us, we find ourselves with circumstances and situations. And to be successful and happy in life, we need to achieve things because it's in the achievement that we can then have a wonderful life. And so consequently, setting goals and things like SMART goals, which I'll talk a little bit about, would make total sense. If I set really good goals and I'm able to achieve things more effectively, then I can have a wonderful life. What you may have noticed is that doesn't tend to work because happiness, well-being, peace of mind, success, they're not really outside of you. It turns out that if you really look at your own life, you'll probably notice that it's in fact an inside-out world. We were born happy, well, peaceful, with self-esteem and confidence. And the only reason we don't have that at any moment is because we've lost the connection to those things, mostly because we've gotten caught up in our own personal thinking. But if you can buy at least the premise of, oh yeah, I start with a wonderful life and then I only ever cover it up, from that place, going about achieving things is a radically different experience because things like self-esteem, happiness, all those things, they're no longer at risk. They're guaranteed already. So now I can just go have fun and achieve things because I genuinely want to do that. And that's what I call fun goals. So here's a quick summary of the way I see the outside-in approach to goals. Well, number one, it's better to have goals than to not have them. We tend to look down or label people who aren't doing things and as lazy and unmotivated. And so the solution to that is, well, you need some goals. You have to have something that you want to accomplish. So people go, yeah, you know, that makes sense. So they set goals, and usually they're fairly vague at first. They might be on the order of, well, I'd really love to have my own business, or I'd love to write a best-selling book, or I really want to lose weight, something like that. And if they do a little deeper research and studying, they come to realize, oh, my goals need to be more specific. They need to be measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound, which is where the acronym SMART comes from. Because if you create goals that are based in those things, you're more likely to follow through and reach your goal. And of course, the premise there is that if you can accomplish goals, then you'll be fulfilled and you'll be happy. And as we're going to see, that may or may not be the case. Now, one of the things that I think is a fundamental flaw of SMART goals, and why I say they're not very smart, is because there's a huge misconception that, well, it's better to reach my goal than to not reach it. Why? Because I'll be happier and I'll be more successful. So, better to create a goal that's realistic and attainable. Heaven forbid I get disappointed or demotivated and I can't take action and achieve what I want. So if I keep things realistic and attainable, I'm going to have a better chance of succeeding and therefore getting what I want. Again, all based in the idea that we're in an outside-in world and happiness is out there somewhere. Success is out there somewhere. And I just need to do enough things to get it. But the problem for me is that what is realistic? How do we know? We're making it up. We make up what we think is realistic just as much as we make up what we think would be fantastic. So when you begin to see that, wait a minute, the world isn't an outside-in place, it's an inside-out place, why not make up something that I'd actually love to do? So that's misconception number one when it comes to SMART goals. Number two, kind of alluded to this already, we think we know what's possible, so why not be realistic and increase our chances for success? Now, what I've noticed is because we don't know what's possible, it's better to do what we really want to do, because that's where our creativity is. That's where our genius is. When we do that, we really don't have a need for motivation. Motivation is built in when you're going for what you genuinely want. When you're in an inside-out world, you recognize that disappointment is only a thought. And so you're not really suspect to those sorts of things anymore. And you're free to just go about the process of achieving things with no real attachment to the process. So just to give you an example, there's a book that I love. It's called The Big Year. It's about three guys who set out in 1998 to set the North American record for observing the number of species of birds in the wild. One of those three guys was named Greg Miller. Greg Miller in 1998 was an IT professional working on the Y2K problem, and he was logging a lot of hours at work. He was recently divorced and he had pretty much no money. So it would be really unrealistic, if you know anything about birding, for Greg to think that he would have a chance of setting the North American record for seeing birds in the wild, because in order to do that, you really have to have the resources to be able to fly anywhere in a given moment, because a rare bird that shouldn't be in North America is in North America, and it may not be there tomorrow. So you have to be able to jump on a flight and get there. You have to have the time to do that. And you have to be in the right places in the country at the right time. Translation, you need a lot of money to do it. So it was absurd for him to do that, but he had this sense that he just wanted to do it. He had done birding for most of his life, and it was just this calling, that's the way I would see it. He had an inner knowing that this was something he wanted to do. it was not easy for him to do it, and he was at a distinct disadvantage from the people who were doing it alongside him. But at the end of the year, he managed to, he would have set the record had one of the other three guys not set it at, in the same year. So he, at that point, had the second best big year of all time. So I would suggest that being realistic is irrelevant. It's more about what am I really passionate about doing and just being willing to go for it. Misconception number three is you need to believe the goal can be accomplished. I mean, you hear this all the time in the world of sports. If you don't believe it, you won't achieve it. Well, I think the basis for that is that we can clearly see that if you believe you're going to fail, that's probably not a good recipe for getting anywhere. So the opposite of that is you must have to believe that you can accomplish it. But I'm going to suggest that that's not really true. You don't have to believe anything in order to accomplish something. It's perfectly fine to have no opinion about whether you can achieve it or not. All you really need to do is be willing to take action and follow the next step, whatever that may be, and listen to your wisdom and guidance and just go for it, because you may or may not be right. You have no idea. It's the willingness to act no matter what you believe that leads to accomplishment. So if you're finding yourself really passionate about something and having trouble believing it's possible, that's not a reason not to proceed. So I'm going to give you real quickly a list of the 11 reasons why I think people fail to achieve their goals. The first one is they don't dream big enough. This is completely counter to SMART goals, which says, hey, you got to be realistic. What can you achieve? Dreaming big means tapping into what your authentic desire really is. And if you do that, if you look at what successful people do, that's what they do better than anything. Number two, people don't succeed because they're going for things that aren't really their goals. They're someone else's goals. It could be their parents, their friends. They might even be the things that they think they should do, but not what they really want to do. It's you know, well, if I was a good person, I'd do this. Or if I'm going to be successful in life, I need to do this. And the other thing is they do what they think is possible. So they limit themselves because they go, well, with my skills and my resources, all I could ever really do is this. And so they set goals based on that. And that's not necessarily a recipe for success. Number three, they fail to commit to the goal. And the consequences are that are you get distracted easily. You don't prioritize the things that would lead to achieving the goal. You let other things take priority, and the goal sort of sits on the back burner. And that, again, will lead to not a lot happening. The fourth thing is an unwillingness to adapt. So as you're pursuing a goal, you may have an intuitive sense that going in a slightly different direction would be a great thing to do. Or you've gotten all this evidence from action you've been taking that it's not working. If you're unwilling to change, to really look at that, then your goals are going to be at risk. Number five, being overly attached to a specific outcome and or time frame along the same lines. your inner sense of knowing will tell you what direction to go in. And if you are too attached to one way, you may not be able to see that taking a different path would make more sense. Another reason people don't achieve their goal is because it's not heart-centered. It's overly intellectual. It's, here's what I think would be a good idea. If I'm going to start a business, here's what I think is really going to be successful, even though I have no real passion for it. For me, heart-centered means your values and what you care about most is infused in the goal. What comes to mind for me is when I am talking to potential clients, I often spend 2, 3, 4 hours with a person before they hire me, and sometimes for whatever reason we don't end up working together. And if you talk to experts, they would say, well, that's a colossal waste of time. You shouldn't spend that much time with someone. But for me, it's about, what are my values? Why am I doing this work? I want to make a difference for every single human being that I have interaction with. And whether they hire me or not is sort of immaterial. I know the right people will hire me. And so finding that for yourself, what are my values? How can I bring that into my goals? If you leave that piece out, again, you're going to have struggles, I think. Another thing people do is they fail to get meaningful support. And that can be in the form of a coach, a mentor, an advisor. But it needs to be someone who's not emotionally invested in whatever you're going for. This will allow them to see things that you're not seeing. So if you're down at the street level, they're up at the 50th floor, and they can see a lot of things you're not seeing. And they can help you overcome obstacles and navigate things that you wouldn't necessarily be able to do for yourself. So that's huge for people when they do that. Number 8, they give up too soon. So what is it to give up too soon? Well, for me, anytime you give up, you're giving up too soon. Provided that the reasons that you started are still valid. In other words, if your intuition, your inspiration, your excitement and passion is still there, don't give up. If on the other hand, you've had some sort of sense that doing something different or taking a whole different path is better, fine. You're not really giving up at that point. Number 9, not willing to do the uncomfortable. So in the course of going after a goal, you're going to find that what's required of you may not be easy. It may be uncomfortable. It might even be a little scary. Could be, oh, I have to make this phone call and I'm really nervous about it, or I have to have a conversation that I'm scared to have to move forward. I need to let go of something. I know deep down if I let go of it, it'll create the space for good things to come in, but I'm reluctant to get rid of it for whatever reason. Being unwilling to do something that you're not comfortable with, even when you know it's the right thing to do, is a recipe for not getting what you want. Number 10 is the failure to take small, consistent, high-value action. So one thing about SMART goals is that they tend to stop, for most people, with an outcome. It's like, okay, I want to be a best-selling author. And then it moves to, well, I want to have the number one book on the New York Times list. It's going to have this title. I'm going to be on the Barnes & Noble shelf by this date. I'm going to have the first draft done by this date. I'm going to go on a worldwide book tour. You know, the specifics get in there, but it's all outcome based. When people don't break their outcome goal down into small steps that they can take every day, and steps that will actually lead to the best results, it's easy to just spend all your time comparing where you are to where you think you should be, and that tends to cause people to get frustrated, stressed, demotivated, and all those things that SMART goals are supposed to fix. And we'll see that actually when you move to the world of fun goals, those issues kind of disappear. And number 11 is they're not having fun. In an outside-in world, if my happiness and well-being, success, self-esteem, all those things are on the line, boy, my goals, I better be real serious about these goals, because if I don't achieve them, my life's not going to be as great as it could be. It might even be miserable. But without the fun, you're just not going to operate the same way. You're not in the level of consciousness to see opportunities that are there, to use the things that are happening to move you forward, even when they look like they're not wonderful things to be happening. So building fun into the process is enormously important. And I've thrown in a bonus, so I guess this is number 12. People don't slow down. Imagine you're writing a book and you're in such a hurry to get out into your future where you have this bestseller that you're focused on, well, I've got to figure out my marketing plan for the book. How am I going to promote it? When I get on the number one on Amazon, how am I going to handle all of these things that are going to be asked of me? How am I going to get this website done? If you would just slow down and write the best possible book you could possibly write, a lot of those other things would take care of themselves. And I find that's true in so many things. We need to design space in our life to slow down. So here's what I see as the pitfalls to achievement in an outside-in world. You finally achieve some things and you discover that you're not fulfilled. It's like, is this all there is? I thought when I finally achieved this stuff, I was going to be happy and successful and my life was going to be working. With the outside-in approach, this happens too often for my taste. The other thing is people experience burnout. It's just pedal to the metal, day after day, working long hours, and ignoring valued personal relationships, health, other hobbies and interests, and things like that. And when you're doing something and you then discover that all of that didn't even lead to what you thought it was going to lead to, that can be really frustrating. And then the third one is the sense of you're always striving and never arriving. You're playing perpetual fetch with yourself, whether it's, you know, throwing a bone and running after it, and when you get it, throwing another one, because it's like, oh, I got done with this goal and I'm still not happy. It must be that I need to achieve something else. That's a no-win game. So I'm going to suggest that there's a different foundation from which you can operate that will radically shift your entire experience of life. And I love this quote from Kierkegaard because it really speaks to the foundation that I'm talking about. So I'll just read it. A man who has a physical being is always turned toward the outside, thinking that his happiness lies outside him, finally turns inward and discovers that the source is within him. And In my book, How Much Freedom Can You Stand, I devote the entire first half of the book to creating this foundation, because it's from the foundation that creating all kinds of wonderful things becomes much more simple, much more effortless, far less stressful, and in the end, you end up achieving more for all of those reasons. So, what is a fun goal? Well, to me, a fun goal is a goal that you create when you realize that you don't have anywhere to get to in life. You have everything you need already inside of you to live a wonderful life. Your happiness, your peace of mind, your well-being, all of those things were with you when you were born, they'll be with you when you die, and they can be with you in any moment of any day when you see where those things are and what's blocking you from experiencing them. So once you have this foundation of a wonderful life, the only thing to really do is ask yourself, what would I love to create? What would be fun for me to do? Where would I love to put my energy this year? And that's really the basis for this idea of fun goals. So we're talking about an inside-out world, and there really are four key components to the foundation for this wonderful life that I'm talking about, and a life that allows you to go after your goals in a fun way. So let's look at those. Innate well-being is the first. That, as I've already discussed, it's, if you really look, it's like, it doesn't really matter what circumstances I'm dealing with. My happiness really fluctuates depending upon my state of consciousness. When I'm feeling a bit better about the world, a bit more optimistic, when my train of thought is on a higher level, whatever circumstance I'm looking at looks a bit more wonderful or a little less problematic. Whereas when I'm in a low-level state, the same circumstance can look downright hopeless. So it's not the circumstance that's really the problem, it's your own internal state and the thought processes that are going on at any moment. So that's what causes you to disconnect from your natural state of happiness and well-being. That's number one. Number two, you always have available to you a choice in any situation. You are never a victim of life unless you choose to see it that way and act from that place. And I understand that there are going to be times, and there are always times in my life when I forget these things, but because I'm aware they exist, it never lasts very long, and I remember, oh yes, I always have a choice here. What do I want to invest my time in? What thoughts do I want to focus on? And all of those things, which leads to thought. Now, I could do an entire 1 hour or more webinar on thought, and hopefully I will one day, because this is, for me, has been the biggest difference maker in my own life, in terms of my ability to enjoy going after goals without feeling stressed and attached to the outcome and thinking I needed to get somewhere in order to be happy and all that. It's when I began to see, thanks to some wonderful teachers in my life, that all we ever experience in our life is our own thinking, 100% of the time. And as I realized that, and as I've come to see that more deeply, things that used to cause me stress don't cause me stress anymore, because I recognize, oh, this thing that's happening is neutral. It has no inherent stress built into it. It's when I think about it and I have a thought that says, hey, this is stressful that this is happening, and then I buy into that thought that is stressful, that's when things get difficult. It's not that I needed to block the thought that is stressful. I just needed to be aware that if I'm going to experience stress here, it's not because I thought something, it's because I thought it, believed it, invested in it, invested more thoughts in it, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy such that you will then experience exactly what you're thinking. So that's the short version of that. So let me move on. Creating your own experience is always what's happening. You are the creator of everything that's happening. That doesn't mean you're creating all these things that happen outside of you, like the economy or, you know, troubles in your important relationships or anything like that. They're not necessarily that you're causing those things, but you're creating your experience of those things by the thoughts you invest in, the actions you take, the decisions you make. So you are absolutely the creator of your own experience of life. Okay, so here's an interesting question. If I'm already happy and I'm already peaceful and stress-free and I have a wonderful life, why in the world would I set goals? Wouldn't I just sit around eating chocolate and watching TV? I mean, what about that? And it's something I thought for a while, and it was a concern for me. And the deeper I've explored this, I've come to see what this quote from Anais Nin is saying is that, and the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. So look, inside of us, we have this connection to a higher level of intelligence, however you want to call that. We have intuition, wisdom, and when that wisdom speaks to you, you will want to answer the call, even if you have a wonderful life. Even if everything is great, you're still gonna have authentic desires that you want to take action on. And this quote really points to that for me. So let's talk about the process of working with fun goals. Where I love to start is dreaming authentically big. So I will spend a lot of time with someone having them talk about what they really want to do. And most people at first struggle with that because they're so disconnected from what they really want. It's always tempered by what they think is possible, what other people will think of them, and things like that. So my recommendation is pick a target, which is nothing more than an outcome that would be pure, unabashed fun for you to go for. Don't put any limits on yourself. Then identify the necessary required actions to guarantee that you will get to the target. One way to do that is to work backwards from where you want to go to where you are and figure out, well, if I want to have the number one book on the New York Times bestseller list, and right now I don't have one page of a manuscript written, what are all the steps I'm going to have to take to get there? And work my way backwards. That will be a very informative and enlightening process to do. And it can even be helpful to say, okay, well, my target is this, but what if I made my target even bigger? What if I shot for something beyond that and I based my actions on that? Now I have a bit of margin for error. So doing that leads to what I recommend and what I work with my clients on is create trackable goals, measurable goals. So there's the SMART goals aren't something to just throw out. I think specific, measurable, time-bound has value. I like to disregard the reasonable bit and focus on doing what you love. But creating a trackable goal that's based on actions that you can take that are entirely within your control shifts the balance tremendously in your favor. So if I'm in the business of selling a product or adding new clients to my business, one of the things I'm going to want to do is I want to figure out what are the actions I can take every day that don't depend on anybody else. So I may not be able to control whether a potential client says yes to me or someone buys my product, but I can certainly control the number of phone calls that I'm willing to make. I can certainly control what I say to a prospect when I have them on the phone. I have complete control over that. And if I do that on a consistent, regular basis, and I track that, and I know, okay, well, if I make 10 phone calls every day, if I have one conversation with a potential client every day, I will definitely get to my goal. Then I can just focus on doing that and let the results kind of take care of themselves. Make a personal internal commitment. So to me, this is a huge thing to do. And I like to think of it as a contract with yourself. It's here's what I'm committed to achieving and here's what I'm committed to doing in support of that. So for example, I have a personal internal commitment to exercise 5 days a week. So that means every morning I'm up at 5 and I'm at the gym at 5:30 and I'm working out in one way, shape, or form. And there's no wiggle room for me with respect to that because I have a contract with myself that I honor. Now, within that contract, that doesn't mean that, hey, if my intuition is telling me that I need a little more sleep on a particular day, that maybe I should sleep in, okay, I'm going to honor that because I know my contract is in place. I'm not going to have to worry about falling off the wagon. So this commitment is an absolutely clear decision. And what it does for you is it helps you to know when to say no and when to say yes to things that show up in your world. And there's tremendous value in knowing when to say no, because if you are up to something big in your life, there are going to be things that requests that are made of you that you just have to say no to. And that's what the most successful people do, is they are very good at knowing when to say no. And this personal internal commitment will really make a big difference for you. Again, I talked about identifying all the steps from your ultimate target to where you are now. Not, sometimes that's not as easy as it sounds. Sometimes you're going to say, well, I don't have a clue how do I get from A to Z. I don't even know. And that's okay because you don't really have to know that sometimes. You can just focus on what is the absolute next step that I can do, that I know to do, and I'm excited about doing. And just put my focus on that, the one or two next steps, and just get started. And trust that your own internal sense will guide you to the next steps when the time is right. And stay consistently in action. So when I was writing my book, I knew I needed to make a personal internal commitment to write every day. And it didn't have to be for hours. It could just be for 10 minutes. but by being consistently in action, I knew I would eventually get to where I wanted to go. And that's exactly what I experienced. And, you know, it's not that complicated. It's, in some ways, it seems too simple, but it really does work. Follow your own wisdom. This is a huge thing with clients that I work with, is that they, at first, they're really not connected to wisdom. They're very much operating based on intellect. What seems like the smart thing to do? What's the right thing to do? And I love to connect people back to their wisdom, because it serves them so well. It'll inform you as to when it's time to adjust and when it's time to hold back. That's completely different than having your whole life based on what are you afraid of, what are you insecure about, what's stressful. All those kinds of thoughts, which tend to cause people to make decisions around their goals, are based on low-level thinking. It's like if you shake up a bottle of soda, you can see all kinds of energy inside the bottle, and we just have a sense of, oh, if I open this bottle right now, it's going to spew everywhere and make a big mess. But if I just let the bottle sit long enough, it will calm down on its own, and then I will be able to easily open the top. It's the same thing with our own thinking and our own wisdom. It's like when our mind is racing, when our thoughts are stirred up, the worst thing we can do is to keep thinking more and stir them up even further. And if you can allow your wisdom to speak to you and let you see that, oh, when I'm feeling this way, what I need to do is put the brakes on the continuous thinking and just step away, do something different, allow my thoughts to settle and my natural well-being to rise to the surface, then I can move forward and make decisions and do things. And I won't be creating a big mess that I have to clean up and after the fact. You know, make it fun. I mean, if it's not fun, you must be doing something wrong. I mean, create a game around your goal. Reward yourself not just for getting somewhere or achieving a milestone, but just for having done what you said you were going to do. If you said, I'm going to write for 30 minutes a day for the next month, and you do it, even though your book's not on the bestseller list yet, reward yourself for that and celebrate, enjoy it. Track your activity rather than your results and your outcomes, and it will make a huge difference. And keep score. It's fun. It can add a game element to things. And remember that there's so much of life that's rewarding in the experience of going for a goal, pursuing things, as much more so oftentimes than actually achieving it. We get this big burst of euphoria when we achieve something, and then there's this sort of letdown if you're not grounded in the fact that it's all really just my thinking that causes me to feel anything, and life is pretty amazing when I'm not all caught up in thought. And so achieving things is just one great thing about it, but pursuing it is really what most of life is about. So creating a wonderful life, I mean, all of it really comes down to beginning to see the true nature of your experience. And when you passionately take actions, what I would encourage you to do is don't forget about the rest of you. It's great to complete projects and accomplish goals. That's one part of a joy-filled life, but if you're doing that and you're not taking care of yourself the way that you know is best for you. If you're not exercising, you're not taking walks in nature, if that's something you love to do, if you're not working on your photography, if you love photography, whatever it is for you, if you're ignoring that for, hey, one day I'll get to that when I've finished accomplishing these goals, that can be a very costly mistake, because those things actually support your well-being. They open up the creative channels, and they give you opportunities to get insights on the things, the projects you're working on. So I like to say strive for variety rather than balance. I mean, we hear a lot about balance. I'm not so concerned that every category adds up in an equal fashion. I'm just concerned more about that the things that really matter to me, I'm doing something with those some of the time. So I have something every week that's from my marriage. I have a date with my wife, and we spend quality time together. I do a father-son activity with my son. I make sure that I get to the gym. All those kinds of things, they don't have to add up to the same amount of time you spend on a project, but having the variety will just, again, infuse you with a lot more energy. Slow down and create space. It's really important, because especially in today's world, with all the technology, all the demands on our time, we tend to, especially in the outside-in approach to things, we tend to get caught up in, what do I have to do next? What do I have to do next? And when I work with business owners especially, they struggle with this. And when they can see that, boy, if I took one day a week and didn't come to the office and just spent time brainstorming about where I want to take things next, who I should be speaking to, what products I should be developing, that time would be so much more valuable rather than trying to figure it all out. And so I think there's tremendous value in that that's often unappreciated. And the last thing is just start now. There's no reason not to. And people say, well, I'll get to that someday. And the truth is, someday never comes. I think it was a great song by Creedence Clearwater Revival. And I think it's really, in a lot of ways, has a lot of truth to it. Someday never comes. We only ever have the present moment. So why not begin now? Now, the other thing that I've noticed, especially recently with myself, is that sometimes setting a goal isn't called for. You have a sense of a direction you want to go in, and I'm calling that a vision here. A vision of where I'd like to head, what direction I would like to go in. And I have my own inner wisdom as my compass. And that's all I really need to move forward and create some extraordinary things. And in the process of doing that, if I have a sense that setting some specific measurable goals that I can track, and having specific actions that I can take on a consistent basis would be a powerful thing to do, well, then I can do that. But until I see that, I can just have fun moving in the direction of my vision. So if you're thinking, well, I'd love to have my own business, or I'd love to write a book, you don't have to have all the details worked out. You don't have to have a plan. You can just say, well, if I was going to do that, if that was going to be the project that I pursue this year, what would the next best step be for me? And just start from that place. it's an extraordinarily fun place to operate from, I can assure you. So quickly, I want to just point out some distinctions between the traditional approach and the fun goal approach. Traditional goals are about staying motivated. And so, hey, if I need to be motivated, I need to keep things reasonable and attainable. Whereas with fun goals, it's all about authentic desire. With authentic desire, motivation is not necessary. Let's face it, motivation is needed to get yourself to do something you don't really want to do. So I'm suggesting you probably don't want to do things you don't really want to do, especially when it comes to things like achieving goals. I mean, there are always going to be things you don't want to do, like perhaps go to the doctor or something like that, but I'm talking about something else here. You don't need motivation. You just need authentic desire. Along the same lines, you're going to need willpower and discipline to create the results you want in a traditional approach. In the fun approach, you need something called still power, which is a term I'm borrowing from the title of a great book by one of my colleagues, Garrett Kramer, who teaches these principles to professional athletes and college and high school athletes as well. Still power is the recognition that it's all only my thinking that gets in my way, and that if I can slow myself down, listen to my own internal wisdom, and allow my natural well-being to return instead of stirring things up, things will sort of self-correct. I will start to see things differently, and I'll have new thoughts and insights that will move me forward. That's really what Still Power is all about. It's a phenomenal book. I highly recommend it, especially for people who are interested in sports. Traditional goals are all about striving, and fun goals are recognizing that you're already there. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped ahead. My mistake. Fun goals are about creating and allowing. It's the art of seeing that not only do I create my experience, but I also allow things to unfold in a natural way, and I respond to those things by creating from them. So it's a nice balance of those two things. Traditional goals, you never arrive. You're always needing to get to the next place because that's where happiness and all those wonderful things must be. And with fun goals, you're already there. There's nowhere to get to, which is really a wonderful experience to realize that, and to not only realize it, just to know it deeply, that my happiness is always available to me anytime. And the last thing is that traditional goals are about getting stuff done. If you go back and watch the 1 minute fly, it's like, okay, I've got this long bucket list. Whether it's the bucket list, a to-do list, whatever it is, it's I've got to get stuff done. And when I can get enough stuff done, boy, then I can relax and enjoy my life. And with fun goals, it's about creating meaning and a deeper experience of life. That's where the fun is. That's where the fulfillment and the joy comes from. And I'm noticing, I wanted to share a quick story before I get to the summary here about vision. There's another wonderful book that I recently read called Life List. It's another birding book. I love birding so much, and this book is phenomenal. The book is about a woman named Phoebe Snetsinger, who she was born during the Depression era. She grew up, went to college, had a lot of dreams and goals and aspirations, but it was the Ozzie and Harriet generation, so she sort of fell into having children, raising kids, staying at home, and she put her goals and desires on the back burner. And then one day she was diagnosed with a form of cancer and told she had 6 months to live. And at that time she had really just begun to do birding in a serious way. She had a pretty sizable life list. It was under 1,000 birds, but it was multiple hundreds of birds. And she was taking trips to do that. And when she got the diagnosis, she made a decision. She made a personal internal commitment, and she started to move forward on a vision that she had. And I would say she didn't really set any goals per se. She just started moving in a direction based on her own intuition. So she said, okay, if I'm going to die, I'm not going to get treated for this cancer. I don't want to be a burden on other people. I don't want to be miserable. I don't want to be in ill health in my last days. I am going birding, and I am going to start planning more trips to exotic places, and that's the place I'm going to come from. Over the next 18 years, she became the top birder in the world in terms of most species seen worldwide. She was the first person to ever see 8,000 birds in the wild. The cancer never took her life. She actually, unfortunately, passed away in a bus accident on a birding trip 18 years after the diagnosis. She took an average of 3 or 4 trips internationally every year to keep her list going, and she really lived her life based on wisdom and vision. So, I mean, it's absolutely a great way to live. So I think we've pretty much touched on the fact that achievement really doesn't lead to happiness and well-being. Recognizing that those things are already present when we're not covering them up with our own thinking and how we interpret that thinking. From that place, achievement becomes much easier, far less stressful, and you begin to experience life in a much deeper, more fulfilling way, such that in the worst case, you have a wonderful life, and in the best case, you have a wonderful life and you achieve all kinds of wonderful things. So it's really true. You don't have to wait for someday to have a great life. You can have it right now in this moment, regardless of what's going on around you. That's the freedom that I believe in with all of my being, that's available to everyone, and it's unlimited. The deeper your understanding of this paradigm, these principles of how life really works, the more powerful your experience of freedom becomes, and there really is no limit. So I want to ask you to ask yourself, what's the impact of beginning right now? Here's what I'd love to do. It's the start of a new year. I'm feeling like I want to give back to this community in a powerful way because it's given me so much. So if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, you know what, I want 2012 to be my best year yet. I don't want to repeat last year again this year. I want more fulfillment, more success, less stress. I want to expand my life in a way that I haven't done so far. If that's what you're saying, I'm offering a life-changing personal strategy session to anyone who would like to take me up on that offer. You can do that by emailing me or calling me. The details, my contact details are on my website. And for those of you who are really eager to make 2012 a phenomenal year, if you're one of the first 15 people to respond, I will guarantee you a session with me sometime in the month of January. This goes for anyone who's here on the call live and anyone who's getting the recording. So I really encourage you to respond to that if you're looking to make this year a great one. And I just want to point out this is an extensive session devoted entirely to you. It's the same type of strategy session I do with clients to hire me and pay me a significant retainer fee to work with me for 3 months, 6 months, or even a year. It will be exactly the same, and there's no cost associated with this. So if that's something that resonates for you, I would love to do that for you. I just again want to thank you for your attention, and I hope that you've gotten some insights that will make a big difference for you in your life moving forward. And if there's anything I can do to assist, I am more than happy to do that. So I'm going to turn the floor back to Emily.
Tim, thank you so much, Robbie. You need to turn off your video so I don't get reverb. I'm going to go to the next slide. I know it's 1 o'clock. Thank you, everybody, for hanging on. I want to let you know a couple more pieces of information. And I see several people emailing saying, please sign me out. I put Tim's email on the chat room. It is also at the bottom of this presentation. And you can see his website, personalfreedomexpert.com. You need to email him or visit his website and let him know that you participated in this presentation to get signed up. We can track you from the chat room. We can get back to your email, so you'll need to email them or go to the website. Please note on this slide here, whether it's sign up to receive information from him, it's not marketing information, it's content information. And you'll be happy to send you an annotated version of this presentation, as well as a complimentary advanced copy of this book, which is coming up soon. And you'll also get weekly content, history-focused articles, and a thought-of-the-week video, which I think you'll really enjoy. And I appreciate that, Tim, that you're making this available to the folks that have signed up. It's not exclusive to almost anybody who has signed up to watch this or later comes to look at the video has this opportunity. So we really appreciate it, Tim. Tim has also agreed to stay on for a while. For those of you who might like to ask him questions now, I'm going to go off talk because I have a reverb issue today. But Tim is happy to answer questions if you have questions. So Tim, if you want to go to the room folder, I'll come off right now and we'll take questions. So thanks everybody for your nice comments. And if you have questions, please type them in now and I'll moderate them for you.
Okay, I'm assuming people can hear me, so I'm happy to stay for a bit to answer questions. Not necessarily the easiest way to coach someone, but you know, I'll do the best I can. If you have something personal that's, you know, you're willing to share, I'd be happy to give some insights that I have on that. If not, feel free to contact me, as Emily said, through my website. My email is tim@personalfreedomexpert.com. You know, I'd love to have a conversation with you and help you in any way that I can. I hear some reverb now, but I see a lot of people appreciating the presentation. I really want to thank you for all those kind words. Not seeing any questions at the moment. So I will hang in there for a few more minutes if people are having questions. Meanwhile, I'd just like to say it's a great time to be in Charlottesville and be around UVA. Getting to the Chick-fil-A Bowl this year was unexpected and an awesome experience. And now our basketball team is 13-1 for the first time since Ralph Sampson was at UVA. So, and not only that, we've got tennis, baseball, and lacrosse coming up. So it's a pretty exciting time. Certainly is for me. I love this time of year, so for all you Wahoos out there, it's we have a lot to be proud of in that respect.
Let me just say one thing I meant to say, and I
There's not one easy answer. I think part of it is pointing back to a recognition that whatever our experience is coming from our own thinking about the situation and coming from the choices we're making about that. Doesn't mean that it's your fault. I'm certainly not saying that, but that's one place to look. And you know, when I work with someone one-on-one, we would spend a lot of time looking at that and looking at, well, what's really going on for you? What are the issues you're having? Why are you having them? Let's see what's really true here as opposed to what's just a thought that really doesn't have any relevance. And looking at what's your intuition here? And sometimes it's having a powerful conversation with the person. Sometimes it's something else entirely. So it would really depend on the individual situation. I hope that's useful. Looking, I know I saw a couple other questions. I do, as far as the books I referenced, Life List and Still Power is by Garrett Kramer. Life List is by Olivia Gentile. Anyone who needs the specific details, I'll be happy to send you links to Amazon to find those books if you need those. Just email me for that. Okay, so Wendy asking, how do you manage new job stress, need to earn a living, but not ideal match to passion? Okay, well, one of the things is, hey, it's worth recognizing that, you know, you do need to earn a living. And if you have a situation that maybe isn't your passion, but you're able to do it, and you enjoy aspects of it, that's a wonderful thing to have. It's a wonderful place from which to start. From there, looking at, well, what would I really be passionate about? How can I start taking steps in that direction right now without having to do anything with respect to my job? Just keep doing my job, doing it well, and focusing on my passion. Now, the passion might be a new and better job or a business, or it might be a hobby, who knows? And I would just also point in the direction of, yes, when you start a new job, it can be stressful, but remember that the source of the stress is always the thoughts that are coming up. It's not the new job. So questioning those thoughts, how true are they? Why am I believing that? What if I didn't believe that thought and I believed something a little bit different? Or what if I just realized this is just, I've shaken up the soda bottle and I've forgotten that's what I did. And so I can just kind of let those thoughts go and move on. And they'll tend to go away. Now, they may not go away forever, but what I've found is as you get deeper and deeper into these principles and start living this way and seeing it, those thoughts just lose their power and they tend not to show up as often. Oh, okay, so here's a question from Meredith. There's a theme among successful executive and life coaches to be in the present and do now. What is it that gets people in the place where that is so difficult? Well, I'm going to point, there are all kinds of explanations that people give, but the underlying reason is because people get caught up in their own thinking. And because when we're not seeing it, our thinking appears real. That's what our life experience is, exactly what we think. So our life is our thoughts appearing real. And so if we can see that, it breaks that up a bit. And whenever we're not in the present, where are we? We're either in the past or in the future. And those things really don't exist. So the only way we can be in the past or the future is in our own mind, in our own thinking. And it's only in the present moment when we can actually do something useful. And so, yeah, being present is a powerful thing, but trying to create that for yourself is a lot harder than just recognizing that, oh, the only time I'm ever not present is when I'm consumed by my own thinking. And so when I recognize that, I just drop that connection, so to speak, and then things sort of return to normal. Yeah, someone's asking, looks like Anna Marie, any in-the-moment tools to make the shift from stress to the present moment? I love the question, Anna Marie. I really appreciate it. I think it's really a powerful question because there's so much behind the principles that I'm sharing. There's a lot more than the book is incredibly detailed about this, so I really encourage you to take me up on the offer of getting a copy of that, because it'll help you see this. But this is very much a non-tools approach to living. I'm not a big fan of tools, because tools, number one, they're things outside of you, and we're always looking outside of us for the solution rather than looking inside. It's the deeper understanding of the nature of the human experience and of the human mind that will allow you to shift from stress in the present moment. It's just a deeper knowing, a recognition. And I'll tell you this, when I first was introduced to these principles, they were really hard for me to grasp. But I kept looking, I kept listening to people talk about it, and one day I had an insight about it, and I just kept looking in that direction, and more insights came, and my ability to remember these things, to live in that place, continues to grow as I work with it more and more. So I don't think there are any tools, it's just developing a deeper understanding of the nature of thought is really what will allow you to shift from stress and to just not have stress be an issue really as much anymore. Just looking to see if I missed any questions that scrolled by. Someone made a comment which, you know, I probably failed to say in the presentation. Yeah, all our feelings come from our thoughts. And for me, there, you know, this is somewhat of a subject of debate, but to me there is sort of this loop of my state of consciousness influences the thoughts that have an effect on me, and the thoughts that have an effect on me influence my feelings, which then influence my state of consciousness. There's this notion that, well, that's true, but it's really just all thought, even thought that we don't recognize as thought. That gets pretty deep for me, but what I know is that as you begin to see these things for yourself, you don't have to do anything. And that's what's really kind of cool. You don't have to control what you think. You don't have to block thoughts. You can just relax and enjoy the experience of life. So if someone's asking about, do I base any of these methods and viewpoints on Judeo-Christian values and scriptures? I'm just going to answer this honestly. I do not. I embrace everyone's belief systems. You know, the foundation for these principles from everything I know doesn't really have a religious basis. It's more of an understanding that, you know, I think maybe I actually do think that there's very much synergies with the core message of most faiths. So I think regardless of what faith you have, this really is not something that you can't work with. So, but for me personally, it doesn't have a basis in any of those things.
Well, thank you.
just from the local joint financial system from a lot of our work that we're seeing to kind of appreciate it. If you would go to file and exit, I'd appreciate it. What we learned is if you accidentally stay online, we can't get the recording quite as fast. So if when you leave, go up above where audio and video is and go to file, exit, and that'll help us get our recording to you a little bit faster. And thanks so much for your great comments, and we will see all of you on the 20th, I hope. Bye now, and moderators, if you would join me in the moderator room. Thanks.